This is Jeff Siegel with Wine Curmudgeon, and my guest today is one of my oldest friends in the wine business, not because she's old, but because I've known her for a very long time. Denise Clark of Austin, who's a wine marketer and a wine educator. Thank you, Denise, so much for doing this, and I really, really appreciate it.
Oh, you bet, Jeff. I can't think of anyone I'd rather talk to.
Well, thank you. And the reason Denise is here today, and this is going to run in October for a couple of different reasons. October is the big regional wine month around the country. It's Texas Wine Month, right, Denise?
That's right.
And this, if I'm not mistaken, is the 10th anniversary of our very first Drink Local Wine Conference in Dallas in 2012.
I think you're right. And that was, I love doing those Drink Local Wine Conferences.
And in fact, you helped put together the very first Drink Local Wine Conference.
We sure did. We helped you out just with participation and promotion. And, you know, it was a great time to be really promoting not only Texas wine, but the other regions that participated.
So we're going to talk today about regional wine and what's happened in the last decade or so. And the good news is that when we did the first Drink Local Conference, there were maybe three people in the United States. One, Dave McIntyre and myself, and maybe one or two others, but three people have really, for about the last decade, been writing about local wine. Now there's lots and lots and lots, which is a really good thing. How have you seen, Denise, from your perspective, how have you seen the Drink Local movement take off and get better since we did that first conference?
No, you're exactly right, Jeff. It has seen a lot of growth, a lot of more interest in drinking local. And I think a lot of that reason, at least here in Texas, is the real changing environment for wines in general and the quality of the wines. Because, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, we were planting grapes that people were familiar with versus today where the growers, the winemakers are all really focused on the grapes that do well for the climate here, this warm climate, which continues to evolve with climate change. And so the wines, the quality of the wines are just so much better than they were 10 years ago. And let's face it, if you meet someone today who had a Texas wine 10 years ago, they usually, you know, scrunch up their face like, not really, right? So it's exciting to go back and talk to these folks and say, no, let's go back and try the Texas wines. And I'm sure that's got to be the case in Virginia, Missouri, Colorado, other regions as well.
Well, I know you just got done judging in Colorado, the Governor's Cup up there, and I've had several people tell me they were really impressed with the quality of the wines.
Amazing. I just did a column, a very short column on the experience there, but the wines were really outstanding. But interestingly, I always remembered Riesling as kind of being the big grape in Colorado. But and in this recent competition, I'd say, no, the Rieslings were good, but there was a lot of interest in like the Petit Sirah, the Cabernets, but also, I mean, I had a delicious Chambersin. And I think so many people who follow local wine, you know, turn up their nose at some of the hybrids and the, you know, the cross varieties out there, and they're really good.
It's funny you mentioned Chambersin, because one of the things that I've been advocating for years and years and years and years and years is the Chambersin makes terrific varietal wine. If wine marketers, wine producers, wine drinkers would just close our eyes and look for the name Cabernet on the label.
Exactly. And that's, you know, I mean, that's exactly what it was. I tasted this and I was like, wow, I love Chambersin.
Well, I know when we did Drink Local in Missouri, we had some amazing Chambersins there as well. So that's the good stuff. And I know
I do want to make one other point too.
Sure.
I think the pandemic has certainly also, in a weird, surprising way, help local wine, because so many people who normally would have gone to Napa or Sonoma or to Oregon for their annual wine trip, you know, couldn't travel. And so they ended up exploring in their own backyard. We saw that at least here in Texas. A lot of wine enthusiasts came out to the Hill Country, visited wineries, and realized, oh my gosh, there is great wine here in Texas wine country. So that had this kind of really surprising effect that a lot of us saw, that now these people are wine club members and they're regular visitors to the winery.
So that's the good stuff. And I've seen the good stuff too. In fact, as I always like to joke, we haven't done a Drink Local Wine Week in 6, 7, 8 years, and it still shows up on all the calendars for wine events. So, you know, that did make a difference. There has been a change. Better wine, better quality wine, better educated, better talented winemakers who don't want to go out to California or Washington or Oregon, but want to stay here. In fact, that's, to me, the biggest change is you'll see winemakers coming in elsewhere to states like Virginia and Texas and Colorado and so forth and making wine. So what are the bad things? What are the things still holding local wine back?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, if someone had Texas wines 10 years ago and haven't revisited it, they still have that mindset, and that's difficult. You know, surprisingly, we don't have a lot of wine writers in Texas, and I know you know this. A lot of our regular wine writers are no longer, their publications are no longer having regular wine columns. I wish we had the Dave McIntyre of the Washington Post at every one of our publications, you know. And so that's hard, you know, if you don't have the journalist who can help share information about what's going on in the industry, that's tough. But on the other hand, there are more bloggers, podcasters, people who are sharing their wine experiences on, you know, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. And so that's a good thing. But it's frustrating not to have regular go-to people to share news about what's happening in the industry.
Yeah. No, it's interesting you say that. I know the Wine Enthusiast just dropped a lot of coverage of regional wine. And I was both surprised and not surprised by that. Because even for the wine magazines, I think this is going to be a difficult period going forward. And they can't count on the revenue that they counted on before. What about pricing? I know that's, to my mind, that's always been one of the real problems with regional wine. Is even if quality improves, do you want to pay $25 for a local wine when you can still, even with premiumization and a lot of junk on the shelves, get a really nice bottle of wine from a well-established wine region for $25?
Yeah, I think that's going to be an ongoing issue. There are plenty of delicious Texas wines in that $20, $25 range, for sure. But when you look at the cost involved in growing the grapes in Texas, making the wines in Texas compared to these other larger established regions, the wines are going to, there's just more cost involved. You can't get around that. And I just hope that, you know, a lot of consumers can recognize that they're getting a special product when they go to their Texas winery. But that's going to be an ongoing issue, because it's hard for me to imagine seeing prices go down with all the supply chain issues going on.
And that also brings up, you talk about the supply chain, that also brings up to me the other problem, and that is availability. And I know that's actually, we've made great strides with that, not just here, but in other places around the country. With, you can actually go into a supermarket even and buy a local wine. But are there still problems, given the way the three-tier system works, with finding local wine on retail shelves?
It is, yes. I mean, you know, I work with some Texas wineries, and they have certain wines that they have in distribution, and that's great because it's a good introductory wine for those wineries, in hopes that somebody picks up that bottle off the shelf, says, "Oh, I want to go visit that winery, see what else they have." But there's a lot of wineries that choose not to be in distribution, right? Because you're not making a lot of money with your wines in distribution, as you mentioned, with the three-tiered system. You know, and definitely when you look at restaurants, let's say you want to go into a restaurant and find a Texas wine, most of the restaurants only want wines that aren't in distribution and, you know, and real small, you know, production and whatnot. So it is still very, I think in the retail space, yes, you can find Texas wines that, your big, you know, you're in HEB, Total Wine Specs, right? But in restaurants, it still can be challenging to find Texas wines on the list.
No, it's interesting you say that. I do a little work for the Alternative Weekly here, if that's what they still call it. And they asked me to, the food editor, who's a very sharp woman, asked me to go to a, I won't mention the restaurant, but a high-end, nationally, internationally known restaurant, and just write about the wine list and the pricing. And the very first thing I noticed is there were, I didn't see any Texas wines on the list. And I thought, well, and you know, I guess nothing has changed, because I could have gone in that restaurant 15 years ago and there wouldn't have been any Texas wines on the list.
Exactly. And I think to me, that's one of the most frustrating things with the local wine industry is there's still that focus on, you know, local foods and the local beers and the local craft spirits that are you'll find on the list, but not the wine. Unless you go to a place like Cabernet Grill or Daidoué, and please, people who've really made a commitment to have local wines on their list. So that one to me is still frustrating, but you know, the wineries keep working hard to move in that direction. But
I'm sorry, we should mention for everybody who doesn't know what Cabernet Grill is, it's in Fredericksburg, and the only wines on the list are from Texas, right?
That's right. It's 100% Texas wine list. They made that decision over a decade ago, and it's they have a real commitment to educating their staff to be very knowledgeable about the wines and the pairings. And so, yeah, it's a really great experience, and you can try a lot of different wines there.
In fact, actually, one of the best, most fun wine restaurant experiences I had was at Cabernet Grill several years ago with our friend Doug Caskey, and we did a flight of Texas whites, and it really was a lot of fun. But that is that. All right, Denise. So yeah. I've decided to appoint you the wine czar of the world. What would be your two or three pieces of wisdom to help the regional wine business take another step forward?
Well, I know you and I have talked before about the changing demographics of the wine enthusiast, right? That it's the younger wine consumer, or younger consumers are not necessarily wanting to move into the wine world. So I think if my best advice is to figure out how to create experiences that younger people in all generations would want to come to, that gives you that opportunity to share your wines. For example, we just did a sunset cruise on Lake Austin. And I think that's the kind of experience people like to do, of all ages, but also young people. You're out on the lake, you're cruising, you have dinner, and now you get to taste 8 different wines from Texas and find something new that you might like. I know one of the wineries I work with, Spicewood Vineyards, they do a sunset social where, you know, you don't have to make a reservation. You can just show up. There's going to be a band playing. There's going to be a food truck. To me, those kind of experiences may draw in younger consumers to come try their wines. Number two would probably be, you know, making sure your tasting room staff can really, really talk about the wines and really and bring that level of hospitality. Don't intimidate. Because again, in many of our states, we're sharing wines that people have never heard of. Alianico, Vermentino, Viognier, Tempranillo. So you've got to really make sure your tasting room staff can bring people in, tell them how these wines compare to more commonly known wines, and not intimidate that newcomer to your tasting room.
Well, that is terrific advice. And I am very glad we did this, because actually this went by so quickly. I can't believe that we're done.
I know. Well, I always love to talk to you. We could keep talking for hours.
No, I mean, it's always a pleasure to talk about regional wine with you, Denise. Denise Clark from Austin, a leading Texas wine marketer. Thank you again, Denise, so much for doing this.
It is my pleasure. Thank you, Jeff, for everything you do.
Thank you. This is Jeff Siegel, the wine curmudgeon. So long until next time.